Good morning and you're very welcome to the programme. Today, David Nabarro from the World Health Organization on travelling abroad, going back to school and making masks mandatory in all public settings. Green TD Nasa Horrigan on the threat of austerity and how the new government will work. Archbishop Dermot Martin calls for the COVID-19 restrictions on mass numbers to be eased. Following Leicester, will other British cities go into lockdown this weekend? We'll go live to the UK for the latest. And from rows over ministerial appointments to Sinn Féin's attendance at a funeral in Northern Ireland, our Friday gathering runs the rule over the issues of the week. All that and lots more to come between now and 12 o'clock. If you'd like to contact the programme, you can text us on 51551. You can tweet at Today Radio RTE or email todayradio@rte.ie. Now, as we continue to grapple with the issue of overseas travel, other European countries are taking decisive steps and reopening for tourists once again, while on the other side of the world, the borders of Australia and New Zealand remain shut. So, what's the best way forward? Well, Dr. David Nabarro is the World Health Organization's special envoy on COVID-19, and he joins me on the line now. And Dr. Nabarro, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Good day, everybody. Thank you.
So we might just take a look firstly at the global situation. COVID-19 cases at this point have passed 10.6 million. The situation, I think everybody is aware, is particularly alarming in the US. They have recorded a new all-time daily high this week. So from the perspective of the US in particular, how worried are you about what's going on there, particularly with comments from President Trump saying that he's hoping the virus will just disappear?
First thing for everybody is to say that we continue to see this virus as very dangerous. And it looks as though it's very much here to stay for the foreseeable future. This means that everyone has to be ready to take it seriously. For us, we're saying the most effective way to get on top of this virus and to have life coming back to some degree of normality is to be able to defend against the virus in every community, everywhere. We have to be on a constant state of defense. First of all, we've got to not let that virus get between us by keeping the physical distance where possible and protecting our faces, as well as really good hygiene and trying to make certain we get out of the way if we've got symptoms of illness. And then secondly, if the outbreaks do come along, then we have to get people isolated and also at the same time do everything possible to protect those who are most at risk, older people, people in institutions and the like. All this is doable. We've seen in other parts of the world that if countries get organized and if people are all on side, that we can keep the virus at bay. But things will go wrong if we get complacent. And I suppose the message that we're saying to everybody is, please continue to take this virus seriously and please continue to do everything possible to not let it get the upper hand.
And yet we saw in the British city of Leicester, they have had to reimpose strict lockdown measures earlier this week because they had a significant spike in the virus. Is that an indication that it is getting out of hand again?
Well, I'm going to say something that will sound a bit odd. Part of being in control means being able to accept that there will occasionally be spikes and that they need to be dealt with quickly and robustly. So what I quite liked about the Leicester response is that it was picked up through the detection system that the British have put in place. And although it took a bit of time to get the arrangements right, the local authority has taken responsibility and is working with community organisations to try to break the cluster and to stop spread. And that will be the new normal, that from time to time there will be little outbreaks. And sooner or later we'll get used to it. We'll say, there's COVID in Ballymena or somewhere. We've got to deal with it. And it's dealt with and life goes on. And provided we can just be super chilled about it and not get very disturbed, then we will be able to build the dealing with these outbreaks into our normal way of living and working.
Okay, so can I ask you then about overseas travel? Because that's been a big point of contention here over the last week or two in particular. A lot of pressure on the government to drop the quarantine from tourist bodies. They're saying it's destroying our tourist industry here, from the airline industry as well. The government is talking, on the one hand, of drawing up a list of green countries, or a green list of countries that would be safe to travel to. But on the other hand, we're being told from our chief medical officer to cancel our foreign holidays. So what is the advice? Should we travel or not?
You mentioned the chief medical officer. Can you just allow me just for just 30 seconds to send him my personal very best wishes at this time? I saw a message that he sent round last night saying he was taking some time off, and just want to use this opportunity to give a massive shout out to this guy and to thank him for his service, which is extraordinary, and hope that things go as well as they possibly can.
Yeah, indeed, his wife Emer has been ill, and I think he'll very much appreciate that message. Dr. Navarro, thank you.
So, and now on to this really challenging issue of travel. If I were in anybody's shoes who's planning a holiday, the one thing I'd want to try to do is to be sure that the overall risk of the place where I'm going is not greater than the risk of where I'm coming from. Because what you don't want to do is to go somewhere on holiday and get sick and then get into terrible trouble and be in a health system that you don't really know. And so understanding both the level of disease and the performance of the response mechanisms is really important. Now, one of the reasons why it's a bit muddled is that people are using different kinds of indicators for deciding how well things are going. And I ask everybody not to get too alarmed about the fact that there's just a bit of disagreement right now. I mean, of course, the airlines and the tour companies and so on really want to restart this because they're losing money. On the other hand, the people would really like to be sure that they're not exposing them to extra threats, especially if somebody going on holiday is diabetic or older and feels they might be at risk. It'll take a bit of time, but the term that I'm using is saying, check, we want to check to see that the risk experience at the destination is same as the risk experience where you're coming from. And to get that information, there needs to be work by the authorities to just go into what's happening at both sides of the air bridge. I don't have any other comments on that can, I think, help people, except to say that if in doubt, don't go. It's much better to be precautious than to expose yourself to a threat, because the consequences are just so terrible if things go wrong. So if in doubt, I would agree with the CMO, don't go.
And even if there are green lists drawn up and the country of your destination does seem to be at the same level of as we are here in Ireland, what about the airport experience? I know flying does appear to be safe enough from what the airlines are telling us and what the Centre for Disease Control is telling us, that there are precautions in place there. But just being in the airport and the queuing and the mingling with people and all of that, is that safe?
Well, I think that any place where people just get close together, especially if the ventilation is not brilliant, it is a dangerous place. You just need one person to be at the early stage of their COVID, perhaps coughing a bit or even shouting, and then others around might get infected. The probability is still quite small, but it's there. And I agree with you that it may well be that it's in the pre-boarding experience or the arrival experience that the problems will be greatest. Once again, I ask everybody to do take the instructions about physical distancing and masking seriously. And remember that it's not you who's the biggest issue here. It may well be the person who's cleaning near where you are, or the person who's looking after a shop that you go into, or a cafe or something. That often it's the people who serve us who are at greater risk than we ourselves. So really do take the instructions about face protection and physical distancing seriously in all our parts of your travel.
Would you fly?
Well, I'm actually going to. I haven't done so until recently, but I've got a new grandchild that's born and is in Britain, and I really badly want to see him. It's now 3 weeks. And so, yeah, I'm gonna fly next week, and I will be following all the instructions on self-quarantine. and I will be very careful at the pre-boarding, boarding, and then coming out of the plane. But always I'm thinking it's the others. It's the person at the desk who's having to do, look at the passports of 50 people. It's the person who is looking after us in the aeroplane. They're the ones I worry about more and more now.
Should all those people be wearing masks, Dr. Navarro?
Yeah, they, of course they're wearing masks, and that's they should be, and I'm pleased to see that most air crew are. But I continue to just look at all the statistics that tell me time and time again that it's those who look after us who seem to be the ones who are getting the greatest risk, and
sure.
And unfortunately,
as sort of like and the so, super spreaders, I think is what you've called them.
Well, I mean, let's say I've got the virus. Okay, I don't know that I've got it yet, so I'm still travelling around, but it's possibly in there, and so I'm still not feeling very ill, but I'm secreting the virus. It's the people I go and have close contact with that are at greatest risk, because I'm just one of 100 or 200 people they might meet in a day.
And on that basis, should everyone serving in pubs and restaurants, should they all be wearing masks?
Well, I think so. But I mean, I also think that the customers need to be thinking a little bit about their responsibility. I've noticed in many cafes here in France where I live, the staff are wearing masks, which is good because they're trying to protect themselves and also they're being kind to the guests. But actually, the risk is more to those servers from us customers who are casually visiting a pub or a restaurant. We also need to be really careful that we are not exposing others.
It's mandatory to wear masks here on public transport now, although it's not being enforced as of yet. I think Northern Ireland has brought it in a rule to make it mandatory to wear masks in shops as well.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would like to see?
Yes, I would. You see, I wish that we didn't have to make it mandatory. I wish it could be something that folk would just do, not just for their own good, but for the good of others, because it's the right thing to do. But as we've seen from situations where people are asked to do it, there's still a perception that somehow mask wearing is for others and not for me. So, yeah, I'm glad it's becoming mandatory. And I would like to say that as well as public transport, it is shops. And it's anywhere where other people are being exposed to a large number of individuals, possibly up close. So security people, when we've got security guards and so on, we really ought to be looking after them. Where there are cleaners, we need to be looking after them. So I like the fact that it's becoming mandatory. I just wish that everybody would actually do it as a matter of course, because it's the only way we can protect people when we have to be close to them.
You mentioned that you're going to be travelling to Britain, and congratulations indeed on the arrival of your new grandchild. But in the discussion about air bridges here in Ireland and where which countries will be on the green list, and we don't know yet whether Britain will be on the green list.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be wise for Britain to be on the green list and there to be an air bridge between Ireland and Britain?
Do you know, I'm super careful about getting down to specifics here, because I've got the lucky situation that I'm not responsible for what's happening in any country. But I do watch the debates as they're reported in the newspapers, and I can see why there are questions being raised. People will want to be sure that, firstly, the level of virus in different parts of the UK is similar to what the level is in Ireland. And secondly, they want to be checking that the systems in the UK for dealing with outbreaks are on par with those in other parts of the world. All I would hope is that there is a really open discussion between both sides, and that the decisions are made primarily on health basis rather than on any other basis. That if we don't do it based on health risk, then what are we doing it on? You know, that's the metric that we should primarily be focusing on.
So would you be concerned there may be a political decision behind it if it goes ahead?
Well, if I'm really worried about employment, and if my community is totally dependent on tourism, I mean, that must be the case in Ireland as well, there will inevitably be economic factors that are being brought into the discussion. And I would be the first person to say, please, let's stop the situation where so many people are out of work or have got very much reductions in their income. So yes, we need to get the economy right. All I want to be sure is that at the heart of these decisions, it is the public health risk that's there. And as well as looking at the actual amount of virus, we're also looking at how well the systems are going for keeping us all safe. In the end, that's what's going to matter the most, is having the systems that enable us to be safe despite the fact that this virus is still with us.
Can I ask you then just finally about schools? And again, a lot of discussion here about a return to schools in September, but a lot of confusion as to how that's actually going to work, because the guidelines are recommending a certain amount of social distancing between older children from the age of about 9 up. Do you think it's realistic for children to go back to school with social distancing in place, or does there need to be social distancing in place for them to go back to school?
The big reason why schools continue to be a problem everywhere is, it's sort of a tricky question, how much do children actually play a role in spreading this virus? We know they don't get ill very often, and that means that we're suspecting that they're not so important in transmitting the virus. Then linked to that is, what about the school as a place where adults can get ill? And we know that that is happening in some countries. So the solution, I think, will have to be that there is a degree of gentle advancing of a return to school policy as really quite soon, because you don't want to keep children out of school for a long, long time. But that inside this, it will be necessary to try to have physical distancing. My colleagues and friends who work in schools, including people in my family, say that children are perfectly capable of understanding what's expected of them if the teachers and parents explain it carefully. And so wherever possible, distancing or bubbles in schools should be considered. And last point is, I think we do need to be prepared for schools to be shut if there is an outbreak that spikes up in a particular place. We should not get too disturbed about that, even though it'll be challenging to manage, because that would be part of dealing with outbreaks.
And sorry, when you say about a gently return to school, does that mean you think it would be a mistake in September for the schools to reopen their doors and invite the vast majority of students back in?
No, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that what my understanding is from reading and listening to colleagues in Ireland, that they're going to have a policy of a return, but they're going to be monitoring it very closely. So the gentle refers to being ready to shift tack if it turns out that things have not gone exactly as one might have hoped. But this is as it is everywhere in the world. It's not special to Ireland. Every country is having to work out how best to do school return. And in some cases, they've had to shift policy. But the majority are finding that if they do it carefully and bit by bit, that it does work quite well. And when you say the vast majority, the key question is how that's going to be done, and also what kind of discourse there's going to be between authorities, teachers and children. And knowing how Ireland does things, I imagine that you will do this very well and in a way that actually brings together everybody in the country, so that you're working on it together.
Okay, and just very finally, and just one final follow-up question to that. You mentioned that some adults have been getting sick in a school environment. I presume you're referring to teachers. I might be wrong, but there have been concerns raised by the teachers' unions here about just that problem, about how safe it is for them in the classroom. Are they right to have those concerns?
There is a real challenge here, because obviously, if you are representing people who might be at risk, let's say teachers or workers in residential care settings and so on, there will inevitably be questions about risk. And they are right questions to have. The difficult challenge is, what degree of risk does one say is appropriate for people in a particular setting, especially when there's a lot of uncertainty about it? So I think it's right that the concern should be expressed, but it's also right that there should be a debate between the unions and the employers, in this case the government, to try to work out what is the best way to minimise that risk whilst at the same time ensure that the service is provided.
All right, Dr. David Nabarro from the World Health Organization, thank you again so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, my pleasure.